Hey, Tom, we've got a really fun show today because we're going to be talking about off-roading and what is the best off-roader. Is it the Bronco, Wrangler, or 4Runner? And it's especially a fun show because we went and did something, Tommy.
Yeah, we bought a new Bronco.
We did. We bought a new Bronco. In fact, we traded in our Wrangler for it. So we're kind of trying to spread the love around so that we're not all Jeep, not all 4Runner, which of course we own, and now we're back to the Bronco. But there's a special model that we bought, and that's because you went on a program a few years ago in Michigan and fell in love with this thing. So tell me all about it.
Right. So the Bronco comes in a ton of different trims, from the base to the Big Bend, the Outer Banks, the Black Diamond. I mean, it goes on. There's even the Raptor trim. But this version you're watching on your screen, if you're viewing on YouTube right now, is my all-time favorite trim of the Bronco. And it's one that I don't believe sold very well.
Yeah, I was pushing for the Heritage Edition in the light blue, but you said that this is the one to get. So tell me about the Everglades.
Yeah. Now, this was only sold for a few years, and I believe they discontinued it. So leave it to us to buy a brand new car that no one else can buy anymore.
As always, we buy the one nobody wants, and then we buy high, sell low.
Yeah, exactly. But the Everglades was a really interesting version of the Bronco because it gave you all of the off-road stuff with none of the luxury stuff. So when you are shopping Broncos, a lot of the times you will see Sasquatch Broncos that have all of the goodies. So I'm talking the premium seats and the power seats and the premium audio system.
Yeah, we own that one. It was a first edition. It was expensive.
Exactly right.
But this one's also expensive.
This one's also expensive, but it doesn't give you that stuff. So you get basic manual seats. You don't get heated steering wheel. You get the standard audio system. So it's a pretty base Bronco, but it was still a $58,000 sticker. And the reason for that is the Everglades give you all of the off-road gear, I mean, the whole enchilada. It's got the Sasquatch package with the front rear lockers. It has the factory-worn 10S synthetic winch.
10,000 pounds.
Which is huge. It came from the factory with a snorkel. It's got elevated diff breathers for going through deep water. It's got all of the cool stuff on it, which is awesome.
Except for the big engine.
It's got only the small engine. It's just a 2.3 liter. And I think that's the reason that they didn't sell well and why they were discontinued. And I was talking to some dealers when they launched. It was around the same time the Bronco was launched. And they said that no orders were coming in for Everglades. Like they couldn't sell them because they were high $50,000. Everybody wanted the V6. The Everglades was four-cylinder only. Everybody wanted the premium features for nearly 60 grand. These were only basic features. So it kind of sat on lots, as ours did. Ours is a 2024. It was built a year ago, unsold, until we came along and paid too much money for it.
55K to be specific.
Yeah, slight discount, but $55,000 we paid for it. It's just such a cool thing though, right? To have this fantastic roof rack, snorkel, winch combo on a dark green Bronco with these amazing steel-looking aluminum wheels that very few people have. And I love this version of the Bronco.
Well, what I love about it, Tommy, is it's what TFL is all about. We buy everything you need and nothing you don't.
So yeah, this is not that.
It is that.
No, this is way more than you need. This is overkill to the extreme. Nobody needs 35s in front and rear lockers.
Well, hell we do. Hell they do. Of course you need 35.
We're not doing the Rubicon in this thing.
Look, here's the thing, Tommy. It costs a lot more. This is a lesson we've learned, painfully learned over the last 15 years. It costs a lot more, as we try to do with the Wrangler, to buy a base model and then build it up to the spec that the factory gives you with a factory warranty. So you're much better off just to go and get the stuff from the factory as opposed to going to your local shop and saying, hey, I want ARB air lockers. I want to throw on Dana 44s. I want, 35s. That's going to get a lot more expensive. So it's much smarter to buy it and have it. And even if you don't use it, you know you have it. And when you show up to that trail ride, you're going to get respect in this, especially if it's in the Everglades. Maybe not here in Colorado.
My pitch to you is...
Uh-huh. Okay, it's got a snorkel. Come on. A snorkel. How much is... That's just by looking at it, that's worth like $1,000.
A lot of the things that these high-end four-wheel drives have, like the Sasquatch Broncos, like the Rubicon Wranglers, are just so much more than you typically need. So if you are realistically doing Onyx off-road level 8, 9, and 10 trails, then yes, go buy the one with the lockers and the big tires, right? But if you are doing like we do, the 4, 5 to 6 trails, a base Bronco on good tires would do those trails pretty happily. A lot of people are buying these extreme features and then not using them. And I understand that it's a status thing, right? You want to feel like you're respected on the trail, but you end up paying a lot for just stuff that you don't necessarily need.
No, I disagree. It's not just about stuff that you necessarily don't need or don't use. It's I'll give you an example. So when we bought this, right, we took it to our local A&W to get a root beer float. Mm-hmm. And we parked it in the parking lot. And the second we parked it, people started looking at it. That is why I think a lot of people buy
the status.
The Rubicon version. It's because like they look cool.
Yeah, they look cool, but I'm always...
And you feel cool driving up as opposed to driving... Okay, so they had a basic steel-wheeled one at the dealership, right? And those aren't all that cheap. They're like $40,000,
I think. They were like $41,000,
but $42. It looks weird because the wheels and tires are too small. It looks like it needs to grow a pair of bigger wheels and tires. And you show up at the A&W and people aren't even notice you. But we showed up with our Everglades and people were like, holy cow, look at that. That is one cool looking rig. And I think that's why people buy Hermes bags. That's why people buy fancy shoes. That's why people wear cool Rolexes, right? Because oftentimes you want to show off that you're successful. And there's no difference in that in the off-road world. Plus, look, another lesson I learned, right, over the years. When you go off-roading, a lot of people think, well, I've got a front and a rear and a center locker, and if I get stuck, then I'll lock my rear locker, and if I can't get out, then I'll lock my front locker. The problem with that is you never want to get stuck, right? So if you have it, use it all the time. So if you're out on the trail, just use all that stuff, and you'll never get stuck, because once you're stuck, then you're stuck.
You know what looks even cooler?
What?
$13,000 in the bank. That's the reality of it. I mean, I understand that... It is a cool-looking vehicle. And don't get me wrong. I'm very excited about it because it's not my money, right? I get to spend the company's money. But I also am very conscious of the fact that these are very expensive vehicles. And you can get away with doing a lot with just a basic vehicle with upgraded tires.
And we tried to prove that with our cheap Jeep.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I don't think we kept that Jeep long enough to really prove it.
Well, because you guys stopped watching.
Yeah, and that's the reality, is that the interest just kind of waned on it, and we can't keep vehicles that people aren't interested in. So that's why we got this Everglades Bronco. And don't get me wrong, I think it looks awesome, and I also love a good-looking rig, and I really like the way that the wheels look with the tire and the winch combo. Looks very purposeful, and that's why I love this Bronco. But I think that it's important to recognize that you can do a lot, especially on the used market, for a lot less money without the flash and have just as much fun.
I was in Nashville on a program, and we were in a park filming, and there was this young lady who had this really well-built, should I say, built-up Wrangler with the Rubicon on it, and I was just impressed. It was like on 35s, had a beautiful lift, triple black, and I go up to her, and I'm like, wow, that's a really great Wrangler. How's it off-road? And she looked at me like I was from the moon, like this girl was never going to take this thing off-road. But she built it out because she liked the fact that you can accessorize these vehicles. That's why people buy them, right? Mm-hmm. You can add things to them. It's like a giant Lego set. You can keep adding on and adding on. And I think that's fine. Why? It doesn't have to always be about, you know, can I get myself unstuck out of a mud hole with the Bronco?
That is fine.
But, you know, maybe it's just about showing up to A&W and feeling like you, you know, have earned something really nice because you've spent the last year working very hard to earn something. And there's something else, too, that – remember Andre's friend?
Mm-hmm. Destin.
Destin, he bought a base Bronco.
Yeah.
And he just kept adding on to it. And then the problem with that is, let's say you do want to go off-roading, because he really got into the Bronco community and he started going on trail rides with other Bronco people, and he bought the base one, which was, how did the trim levels go on the Bronco?
It was literally called base.
Yeah, okay. And then he ended up spending a lot more money, you know, just trying to upgrade this, putting new suspension on it, putting a lift on it. And at the end of the day, he barely had a Bronco, you know, that was as capable as if he had just gotten the darn Sasquatch package.
But a lot of people like that process.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people would rather spend less and then upgrade.
But in the long run, you're going to spend more.
Yeah, but you're spreading that money out over 2 years or 3 years.
Well, right? But you can take this Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. And because it's got the bigger axles, because it's got the, you don't have to get ARBA lockers or whatever kind of lockers you want, it's already got that, you can also upgrade this. But you can go bigger.
Yeah, but then you're at $70,000 or $80,000 instead of $50,000 or $60,000. But my point is, like, people love that process. Yes. And I think we don't like that process, you know? I don't really like the modification process. Because
we've gone through it like 15 times.
Exactly right. We've done it a lot.
I've kind of been there, done that.
So that's why I think you really like having the one that's all said and done. Me as well. But I think a lot of people value these vehicles because they are like Legos, right? So they would rather get the cheap one because they're going to change it all anyways. It's like all these people that buy Raptors and then the first thing they do is rip out the suspension.
All right. Let's share. Before we go and compare this Bronco to the 4Runner, to the Wrangler, and kind of talk about, you know, what makes them unique and what, which one's better at what and which one's worse at what. Let's talk about that. Now, you bought a very nicely used LR3 Land Rover.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided that you wanted to put some off-road stuff on it.
Yeah.
What happened to all that off-road stuff?
What do you mean?
Well, the winch broke when we needed it.
Yes.
The rock rails rusted to pieces.
Yes.
Right? And that's the problem. We've gone through this process so much that unless you know who you're buying the stuff from and the stuff that you're getting, chances are you're going to get the Kmart special of off-road parts. And it's not going to be warrantied, and you're going to live with it for 2 years, and it's going to start to look like crap. It's going to make your vehicle look like crap because eventually the stuff is expensive, but the really good stuff is really expensive, and so you end up kind of going with the middle-of-the-road stuff, but that stuff just doesn't last.
You're right. The winch failing was a terrible thing, but I deliberately bought the cheap stuff.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
Because I wanted to be...
Because you're cheap.
I wanted to be in this... I wanted to be in this car $8,000,
yeah.
Right? And guess what? I'm in this car $8,000. And guess what? The rock rails rusted. And guess what? I don't really care because I bought the $700 rock rails, right? So I enjoyed that. And the other thing I like about my LR3 is that it's the only one that looks like that. And that's what Destin loved about his Bronco, right? He could have gone and bought a Badlands and just called it a day.
Well, I'm not saying that's the only one. I think there's others that look like that.
But realistically, you don't see a lot of LR3s with white letters out and rock rails and a winch, right? Like that to me is kind of special that it's not like every other LR3 on the road. And that's what Destin liked about his Bronco is with that lift and those tires and his mods, it was his vehicle, right? And you don't really get that by going out and buying one that Ford built for you. So I think that's one of the big appeal with these cars is you get to personalize them and make them your own.
Yeah, but both Wrangler and Ford and to some extent Toyota make so many different models in so many different color combinations that you're unlikely to see a very similar one on the trail. So I get that. I mean, you can have an original one, but you can also kind of get that. Like if you get one of the Heritage Edition Broncos, those are very rare and very cool. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be, 15 Heritage Editions out on the trail or in the
but
mall
parking
lot.
You will see them. Like,
yeah, sure.
You go out, you buy a white TRD Pro, you're going to find another white TRD Pro.
I'm looking at you'd have to really be into Land Rovers to notice that yours is, it's not going to be like something that most people are going to notice.
My point is I didn't do this for most people, right? I built it for myself.
Yes.
And that's why I love that thing, right? Is because I went through the process of selecting the winch and the rock rails and that I put that lift on it. And so I think that's a lot of the appeal of modification, right? So we're having this conversation. Do you buy ready to go, which is your argument, right? And then use it.
I'm just saying it's always cheaper to buy ready to go.
Sure, but not if it's a $4,000 Land Rover.
Sure.
Then it's cheaper to buy a old car and make it better.
Okay.
Right? Obviously, this car doesn't compete with the Bronco, my clapped out LR3. But yeah, it is a good conversation. I love that Everglades. I think it's very cool. But I also recognize that I personally wouldn't pay $55,000 for it because I couldn't afford that, where I can afford an $8,000 Land Rover.
Sure. But you can't take it from that perspective. There are people who can't afford that.
Sure.
And so let's talk about
those people are going to buy this, and then they're also going to change
it.
Actually,
you could afford it too. You could do it the way most people do it, and that is take out a loan.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that on an off-roader. Because then
I'm just saying a lot of people, that's how most people buy cars.
My issue with taking out a loan on a lot of newer vehicles that are off-roaders is then you're putting the bank's off-roader in peril, you know? If I mess up this Land Rover...
Well, it is insured. I mean, the bank makes sure that you insure it.
Oh, State Farm's not going to insure it if you roll it on Black Bear. They're going to be like,
don't roll it on Black Bear.
Tough luck, idiot. That's what they're going to say.
A lot of people would be like, Black Bear, what is that? It rolled down the street.
Yeah, but most insurance is not going to cover off-road damage, you know? And even if it rolls over, they're going to want to know where it rolled over.
Most people, what is this thing called Black Bear? I was just driving it around, you know?
Yeah, and then your insurance is going to say, where's the police report?
You know,
where is the police report?
I don't know. Now we're arguing about stupid semantics.
I just think but that's the thing about off-roading.
I'm just saying, Tommy, if you're on the, I don't think you're right about this. I think if you're on the trail, there are two kinds. There are the people who have probably not Bronco because they're not old enough, but certainly in the Jeep world, there's people who have YJs and JKs and probably paid for and, upgraded. And then there are people who have JLs.
Right.
Who have quite a large loan on these
You're
things
exactly right.
and are still wheeling it. So I'm not sure this is I think you, this is specific to you. You may be the only one who would borrow the money and then not off-road it, but I think a lot of people will borrow the money
for sure.
And off-road it.
But there, what, this is a common thing in the off-road world. What is the best off-roader in the world?
The one you rent.
No. That's funny.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
It's the $4,000 Wrangler.
Okay.
Right. It's the crappy one you don't care about. The best off-roader in the world is one you don't care about.
Right, but not everybody's out there running Black Bear. A lot of people just want to go run like Onion Creek or one of the, you know, just
yeah, for sure.
Run something that's a little bit less crazy and a little bit more mellow. All right, so let's go back to this topic, which I'm sure people are waiting for. Which of the three that we've now owned do you want to talk about? Do you want to start with the 4Runner? Because we've just been doing that and then work up to the Bronco. Let's start with that. Let's start with the 4Runner. Mm-hmm. So I was just in Moab doing a thing called Cruise Moab, which is a Toyota get together and ran a bunch of trails. And then, of course, me and you ran a bunch of trails as well. And so what is your take on the 4Runner? Now, we have a TRD off-road that is kind of also about the same cost as this Bronco. We paid $57,000 for it.
Yeah.
It was brand new. It's got the rear locker. So let's start with kind of the equipment, and then we'll compare it to like a $57,000 Bronco that we just bought. So those are head-to-head, and we'll make this video, but let's just compare the two. So with the 4Runner, you're only going to get 33s. And once again, the most important thing in any vehicle is the part that touches the ground. So whether you're on-road or off-road, the tires are really going to affect how it drives and how it behaves. And the Toyota does not have the same size tires, at least from the off-road perspective, that would make it as capable as a Bronco on 35s.
Yeah, I mean, and we can go tit for tat and compare. The 4Runner doesn't have a front locker. The 4 does, right? They can both be had with sway bar disconnects. But the...
Which ours doesn't have, ironically. It's the only thing it doesn't have.
Neither are Ford or our Ford. But... Really, in my mind, you just can't compare them.
Okay, why not?
Because
the one's a convertible, maybe because of that.
No, I just think that the mentality is very different.
Okay, let's hear it.
You know, the mentality on the Bronco is that this is designed to be the best off-road vehicle that Ford can build.
Yeah, or maybe the Bronco Raptor.
Even think with like a standard Sasquatch Bronco.
Okay.
You know, when you are talking about a vehicle that has incorporated a front locker, you are at a very different level of engineering requirements.
All right, so compare it to the TRD Pro.
But even still, I just don't think they can compare. The 4Runner is more intended to be a long-term lifestyle vehicle, is how I describe it, right?
Okay.
What
does that mean?
It's a car that's designed to be primarily a vehicle you can drive every single day for a very long time, for years and years and years, and also be a 7 out of 10 off-road, where I get the impression that the Bronco is designed to be a 9.5 out of 10 off-road, but they're willing to make sacrifices for off-road performance based on on-road comfort.
So I would put it this way. I think, you know, the Toyota people are saying right now that, hey, let's compare these two 100,000 miles from now,
mm-hmm.
and which one will be still on the road, which one will be worth more, which one, you know, will still be ticking along without any issues. And they're right. I mean, if you take history as a guide, the 4Runner is one of the longest lasting, one of the least appreciating, one of the most reliable, that's the word I think I was looking for, vehicles that you can buy, period. Not just off-roaders, but period. They just go on and go on. Remember we had that one that had 225,000 miles and it was still ticking along and we were able to sell it. We had to put some, what did we put into it? We had to fix it somehow.
Yep.
What did we
put? I don't remember.
Packs, coil packs?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
No, it wasn't. It was like a year ago.
No, I think it was like injectors or something.
Coil packs. Yeah, it was coil packs.
Coil packs, yeah.
Yeah, so we had to put some coil packs on it and it was good to go. But I think more from my point of view, I would say, here's the difference. If you buy vehicles primarily for what you're going to do with them, not what you think you're going to do with them, then get the 4Runner.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
So if you're going to spend 95% or 99% of your time on road, the 4Runner will probably be a much more comfortable, much more civilized. And what I mean by that is it's just much more quiet because it doesn't have that soft top or hard top option that's removable. In a lot of ways, it'll be a much more comfortable vehicle because it's designed mainly as an on-roader that can go off-road.
Yeah.
Now, if you want the bare-chested, hardcore off-roader that you can take on-road, then I would definitely say go for the Bronco because that one obviously has a lot more off-road cred. It's got the bigger tires. It's got the lockers. It's got, all of the stuff that will make it shine when you're off-road, but will be detrimental when you're on-road.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. And I think that's been the case with 4Runners for a long time. But there are people out there, and I see a lot of these on Instagram, that will take a 4Runner and then elevate it up to the Bronco out-of-the-box capability. And you can just see the capability differences if you look at the approach angle numbers, the departure angle numbers, for example. But even like the ground clearance. I think that 4Runner has maybe 8.5 inches of ground clearance, where Bronco is 10, 11, 12 inches of ground clearance in some cases, right? So you can really see just based on that where Toyota and Ford's minds were at when designing this vehicle. Yeah.
Toyota's a very conservative company, and I think this frustrates a lot of Toyota fans, and that is they want the customizability, is that the right word, customizability, of a Bronco, but they want the reliability of a Toyota. So like my friend James, who has a fifth-gen 4Runner and wanted to put a big bumper on it, put a winch under the bumper, really had a hard time with that because the way you have to fit that bumper is very precarious because there's all these angles on that front of that 4Runner. You got to cut it with a Sawzall. It can look kind of janky. It's just not an easy vehicle to customize. Yes, you could put better suspension on it. You could put bigger wheels and tires on it. But when you start doing things like bumpers or anything that involves customization beyond the suspension and the wheels, it gets very difficult.
I mean, I don't know if it's – I think very difficult – it's relative,
Well, I mean, there are companies that'll do it.
Like for me, very difficult would be a Defender, right? Land Rover has engineered that vehicle with four-corner independent air suspension and relatively small wheel wells to the point where when you start wanting to lift things big, you got to start talking about subframe drops and fundamental suspension geometry changes, right? At least with the Toyota products, and there's such a big aftermarket community where you could do a 2-inch lift, throw some upper control arms on there, and have it ride fairly similarly to how it does currently. But you're right in saying that there is a level of modularity that you get with the Ford and the Jeep that you don't get with the Toyota. And I think that bumper is a good example where, like, on the Ford and the Jeep, the bumper is a separate unit from the body. So it's been intended or designed to have a winch put in from the get-go, where the Toyota system is an integrated front end, right?
Cole, can I airdrop this to you, please? You have an airdrop? Okay, I'm going to airdrop you this picture. What's the computer over there so we can put up? Studio, yeah. Okay, here you go. I'm airdropping
it to Steve's?
You. Yeah, so we have a friend, Steve Burt, who just was the manager at the local Land Rover dealership here in Denver, and he moved over to Toyota. And so he did some crazy things with Land Rovers. Here's something that he did with the 4Runner. So I wanted to point something out. So he put 35s. I think those are 35s. Maybe. No, I think those are 37s.
They're 35s.
Let me see what he said
35s.
Here. 35s. Very minor trimming to fit with just a leveling kit installed.
Yeah.
So that's the vehicle that he created. But you'll note, and this guy is an off-roader from head to toe, right?
Sure.
He's built out 392 Wranglers with 44s. But look, you'll notice that he lifted it. He put on 35s. But look at the bumpers. Didn't touch them. And there's a reason for that.
Steve will touch the bumpers. The reason he didn't touch the bumpers is because this is the first thing he's doing. That thing is going to be so modified by the time he's done with it.
I mean, it could be that because the Foreigner is so new, it doesn't have a lot of aftermarket support.
The reason it doesn't have aftermarket bumpers is because Steve bought that car probably 38 minutes ago and already put 35s on it.
I think my point is valid.
Did you see the front end of what he did to his Defender?
I saw the front end.
That front end is not going to look like that for more than maybe two and a half hours.
I'm saying that is a lot harder to do.
It is harder.
On a Forerunner than it is to do on a Bronco.
Like Steve said, it was surprisingly easy to do that which is good. That means that Toyota has thought about that. But even the fact that he has to do a little trimming to fit 35s, right, indicates that it's not the same level of modularity as a Wrangler, which will fit 35s.
What color is that, by the way?
Mud bath. Okay. As a Wrangler that will fit 35 from the factory, or same thing with the Bronco. So you're right about that, right? But that doesn't stop Toyota people, right? Toyota people love their brand. They love what it represents. They love that kind of that built-in reliability. So they will jump through the additional hoop to get it to that level of capability of a Bronco or Wrangler.
But what I mean by Toyota's very conservative is
to keep
that level of reliability. Like you can go to your local Ford dealership or Jeep dealership, and you could walk out of there with a very customized Wrangler or Bronco in about 22 hours.
Uh-huh.
That's not going to happen with Toyota, right? Toyota leaves a lot of money on the table by not providing those parts from like Jeep has Jeep Performance parts. I'm sure Bronco and Ford has their own version of that where you can actually do that. But Toyota won't let you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And even they're so conservative that like we just took the TRD Pro off-road. We went into Hell's Revenge, and I didn't get a real sense. And thank you, Toyota, for letting us do that. But we had a whole bunch of people, and dude, we just crawled. I mean, did you get a sense of how capable that vehicle was on that trip? Or I just felt like we were going so slow, and the guides and the were so conservative that I never had a chance to see just how hard I could push that vehicle.
The problem is that they wanted to ensure that there was no contact with the rocks at all. So what that meant is we ended up taking some probably pretty weird lines to make sure that the tail or the nose didn't touch, right? Whereas with the Wrangler or Bronco, if I was out there, or even our Toyota, I would have just gone through the obstacle and you scrape the nose, it's got a skid plate, you scrape the tail, oh well, right? So they were being very conservative on this trail ride. But I think Toyota is starting to get it because if you look at like this generation, first time ever that we're seeing this level of commitment on a TRD Pro 4Runner, you know, first time we're seeing like factory included sway bar disconnects, right? This is stuff that Toyota hasn't done in the past. So they are leaning more into that off-road capability. And, you know, you have a wide body stance on this. You've got a very different suspension on the pros than an off-road. So they do understand it. But I think you're right in that they're just more conservative than the domestic automakers in offering these tires specifically. I mean, it's the tire size that really is the main difference between the 4Runner and the Bronco from a look standpoint out of the box.
Okay, and don't hate me, all you Toyota fans out there, but I'm going to say something, and I think it's true. And we'll do this video because we now have both of them. We have the Bronco and we have the TRD Off-Road. But I would say that if you get a Bronco Sasquatch and compare it to a Toyota TRD Pro or Trail Hunter 4Runner off-road, the Sasquatch will wipe the deck with the
Toyota. Stock, yeah. Because it's got a front locker, it's got bigger rubber, right?
Yeah.
It'll just
kill it.
But then again, I don't know realistically if people are cross-shopping it. I don't think they are.
I think Toyota people are Toyota people. And
exactly
Bronco
right.
People.
So I kind of think like...
But that's what Jeep thought until everybody kind of switched to Bronco.
No, but Jeep and Bronco people are cut from the same cloth.
Okay.
That's just two sides of the same coin. When I talk to people that are really proud of their 4Runners and their Tacomas, my impression I get from them is they never considered anything else. I've never met someone with a lifted 4Runner that was going between a 4Runner and a Wrangler. Right.
Well, let me.
That's like oil and water. Toyota and Jeep people are just not the same people.
Now let me make friends with you Toyota people again. If I was going to Moab, let's say Hell's Revenge, and I had the choice between a 4Runner to drive there and a Bronco, I would take the 4Runner. And once I got there, I'd want the Bronco.
Well, yeah, and that's the flip side is that 4Runner is very refined on the road, with one exception. That 2.4 engine sounds like a bucket of rocks in a blender. It's really bad.
It's not a good sound.
And for some reason, Ford is able to really get a cool sound out of the 2.3 liter EcoBoost, which is essentially the same displacement, same philosophy, You know, it's a longitudinally mounted four-cylinder turbo, right? But Ford, and it's definitely fake, but they pump in engine sound into the cabin.
So they disguise the four-cylinder
and they disguise
rocks in a blender.
The harshness. And yeah. It works. Like, genuinely, even though you might be upset it's fake, it works. And that driving experience sounds good. Whereas the four-cylinder driving experience sounds very bad, right? It's just very harsh.
And then there's other things that Toyota does do some cost-cutting. I know the Bronco Everglades is all non-leather, obviously, a lot of plastics. But, you know, our $57,000 400 TRD Pro is also all plastics and no leather as well.
Sure.
So they're both, you know, they're both at that same level. But here's a big difference in my mind. The Ford allows you to do 4 Auto, whereas the Toyota, you have to select either 2 High, 2 Low, or 4 Low, and you don't get that auto feature, which is really nice, like in the spring here or in the fall when you've got these conditions where it's kind of snowing or slippery, and then it goes dry and wet and dry, and you got to keep switching from 4 High to 4 too High because you start crabbing. And the Ford solves that problem with that 4 Auto button. I think that is a big difference between the two.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, if you can get that in a Toyota, it's just not a 4. Well, you can get it in a 4-owner.
But you got to get the City Slicker one, yeah.
But what's the solution to that?
Buy the Bronco.
No, Toyota has a solution to that.
What's that?
Buy a Land Cruiser.
Yeah, that's true. But then now you're talking, because Land Cruisers start at like 57 and then they go up. So the Land Cruiser starts where most of the 4Runners end, unless it's a TRD Pro or Trail Hunter Edition, which are like 65.
They're 70.
They're 70, actually. They're 68.
Yeah, they're expensive.
They're expensive. And then the other thing that I like about the Bronco is just ease of off-road use. So the 4Runner, you got to put it physically in 4 low. Then you got to then there's a button. You have to put neutral, select to lock the rear locker, and then you got to choose between like 5 different off-road modes.
It's the same thing.
The Bronco, you can just choose the off-road modes with that goat dial, right?
Uh-huh.
And it'll do everything else for you. So if you put it in rock crawl mode, yeah, it'll put in 4 low and it'll lock everything.
It's kind
up.
Of annoying to me.
Okay, well, I'm just saying.
Because the problem is, like, so they both have off-road modes.
Right.
So to get any vehicle in 4 low, you have to go neutral.
Sure.
Even
I'm not talking about the neutral. I'm just saying if you put the vehicle with the goat modes, you put it in rock mode and it does everything else
for
you.
Yeah, but why does it immediately lock your rear locker?
Because you're in rock crawl mode.
Yeah, but you don't want that when you're driving around on the trail.
Well, you can unlock it manually.
Yeah, but then you got to go through and unlock it and lock it manually, which you're already doing on the
Once
Toyota.
Again, I think we're in this point where you're arguing with me just for the sake of argument.
But
I think most people would like the fact that, hey, I'm going to go rock crawling, so I'm just going to put in rock crawl mode and not have to worry about, you know, is this locked? Is that
But then you're wondering why the car won't turn, right?
No, I'm not wondering that. I know it's in rock crawl mode, so it won't turn. I get that.
But then you have to take it out of rock crawl mode if you want to make a left turn.
I think we're arguing for this.
No, but like I'm saying, with the you end up doing the same stuff. You end up still turning lockers on and off.
No, it's one step versus like 3 steps.
But even when you're on the trail in rock crawl mode, you don't want to spend...
I don't know how you can argue with that, one step easier than 3 steps.
Would you spend 8.5 hours on a trail with your rear locker on? That's insane.
But it's not permanently locked. You can always unlock it.
I know,
here's the choice.
Yeah.
Can we just make the... I don't want to do this.
So,
I hate bickering.
But here's my point. You get to a trail, right? Let's say you get to Ironclads,
Yeah. Okay?
You put the car in 4-wheel drive.
Yes.
You're in 4 low, right? The first part of Ironclads trail, I don't want the locker because there's nothing there, right? So the first thing I do in the Ford is put it in rock crawl and then turn the locker off. And then once I'm an hour into the trail, when I get to that rock garden, then I'll turn it on. Where the Toyota is the same thing. I have to turn the locker on and off. What you're missing, the point here, is in the Toyota, when you turn the locker on and off, it's a 28-hour process of the light blinking constantly and driving slowly and forward and backward, and it just doesn't work very well. And I know Toyota people are going to argue with me, but I've been doing it wrong for 25 years. But my point is, like, it's a pain in the butt. The Ford, the locker actuation is immediate. It's immediate. You push the button, it's on, off, on, off.
Can I just I don't want to keep bickering about this, but I'm going to give you five vehicles that are extremely fussy when it comes to off-road mode. 4Runners are extremely fussy. With lockers. Jeeps are extremely fussy with lockers. You got to put that big lever, and sometimes you can get it into the 4 High, and then sometimes it's hard to get into 4 low. That lever, I like the actuation of the lever, but it's never smooth, it's never easy.
They're a little fussy.
They're fussy. Land Cruisers, same problem as a Forerunner.
They don't like lockers.
Fuster. And the fussiest one of them all is the Grenadier, which we also owned.
Well, that's because it has to, yeah, that's
that one
has to
in a certain order. You can't just like lock.
Well, that's the same thing with the problem
the
with
G-Wagon the G-Wagon also is fussy.
The problem.
Whereas with the Ford, you go take that round little thing, dial it to off-road, everything's done, you go.
And then you turn your locker off immediately.
I'm just saying that is much less fussy than having to fuss and having to deal with all of these different parameters and figuring out which mode is right. Oh, should I be in sand mode? It's kind of sandy. Or should I be in off-road or rock road? You know what I mean? Just put it in a mode and the thing does it for you. It's smart.
My argument with this is modes are 90% useless. Any modes. Just drive the car. If you don't understand how a locker works, what is a mode going to help you with? Right? So you just stick it in low range and then you use the lockers when you need to. Multi-terrain select, the goat modes, the Jeep Trail mode. I just don't want any of it. It doesn't change the vehicle that much. Sometimes it might change shift points, shift programming. It might change throttle response a little. That's cool. But the way I like to drive a vehicle, four low, and then you're human. Use your brain and use the lockers when you need to use them, right? Don't rely on modes.
I was super disappointed in a Discovery 5.
Well, so the Land Rover modes are the only ones that have a dramatic change, in my opinion.
Because they came up with it, right? They invented these different modes. And let's face it, most of it, once you have the hardware, it's just software programming. It's having the sensors in place.
Yes, you're exactly right, yeah.
And then it's just having sensors and hardware and then software programming. And Land Rover was the first one to come up with these modes. And so when we took our Disco 5 up the wall at Moab and you had it in a rock crawl mode we had full throttle and the wheels weren't turning, I was super disappointed. Last time I saw that was in a Subaru, which is also super disappointing, and that has a CVT, but this doesn't have a CVT. So the one thing I really hate off-roading, there's our Land Rover, you're going up the wall, you've got a floored, and that's what's happening.
Yeah, it just gets stuck.
Yeah, that is just super disappointing. And do like this. I'm holding up our little World War II wheelies. This will do what you tell it to do.
Yeah.
Until it can't. The programming is getting ahead of you.
But that's my issue with modes, is most of the time they limit you instead of unlimiting you, right? It feels like a lot of the time, because it takes over throttle.
So what do you think? People in the comments, and I talked to some of the Land Rover people recently, they said the way they get by that is they have to hold the brake down and give it throttle at the same time, and that fools the system into thinking that it can actually send power to the wheels.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like, why do you need to fool a system?
I was very disappointed with
why
this.
Why can't it just work, right?
Right.
And that was surprising, because usually Land Rover terrain response systems are the best in the business, right?
Yeah.
And I do think that is a system that does change a lot based on the modes. And the reason that the Land Rover system is very mode dependent over something like a Wrangler is because the Land Rover integrates not only throttle, maybe steering, maybe shift points into it, but they also integrate air suspension, right? And then a lot of these Land Rovers also, some Toyotas do this too, but a lot of these Land Rovers also have dynamic sway bars, right? So that they can control that and cross-linked air suspension so they can pump and deflate different bags at different points. So typically, the Land Rover systems perform the most differently based on the modes. That was a terrible result from the Land Rover. We were all very disappointed with that. Don't get me started on Discovery 5s. I think that the Defenders are very cool, and
that's a Defender underneath.
But it's different engine. It's a very different engine.
Well, that's a 2018 with the TD6.
I mean, what it felt like to me was not the four-wheel drive system. It's like the engine was limiting it. It was like it was protecting its transmission something.
I think the electronics were limiting it. So
yeah, but
I heard it. The engine wasn't full throttle. I mean, you probably had, what, 2,000, 3,000 RPM turning?
My point is that...
How many RPMs were going?
1,800. The stall point on the torque converter is. But my point is that... it didn't feel like the four-wheel drive system was limiting it. It felt like something in the engine computer was saying, whoa, we're trying to save the transmission here. We're trying to not build up too much heat there. And I've never experienced that like in a Disco 3 or any of the older Discoveries.
And this is a great time for a segue, and this is why I love Jeeps. Because let's face it, if the 4Runner is over here where my right hand is, the most on-road
worthy. Well, I think we should talk about this just briefly.
Yeah.
Even more on-road worthy is the Defender.
Let's keep that off.
But it's part of the competition.
We need to get the Jeep people in this conversation. Let's get the Jeep people in, and then we'll go back to the Defender because we've owned that as well. So to my right here, I'm holding up my right hand. The most on-road-worthy vehicle of the three so far that we've been discussing is by far the 4Runner.
Cole, if you scroll up that 4xe one you're just looking at, it's a good one to show folks the new... No, keep going up the green one. There it is.
Yeah, so on-road 4Runner. Now, to the left of that, going more off-roady, let's say the 10 is very good on-road, that's a 4Runner, and one is very good off-road. That is the Jeep Wrangler. Out of the three, that is by far the most off-road worthy for one simple reason, Tommy, and that is, well, two, heritage, because it's always been an off-roader, right? It comes from this World War II Jeep, and two, solid axles.
Yeah, right, and that this is the only vehicle that has a solid front axle, which kind of acts like a teeter-totter when you're off-road. It forces one wheel up and the other wheel into the hole, and it is still the most... effective system for front-end articulation. I think that the Bronco comes close with their optional sway bar disconnect and their Sasquatch Broncos, right? Or I think it's available on... It's not all Sasquatches. Like, ours doesn't have it, the Everglades.
Yeah, I'm bummed.
But the Badlands has it. But, yeah, having that solid front axle is awesome. But the bigger benefit of solid front axle, which people don't always talk about, is the ease of lifts, right? Because with a solid front axle, when you...
We do a puck lift.
When you... No, I don't mean that. I mean, when you physically change the height of...
Are you talking about me actually lifting it?
No. When you change the height of the chassis relative to the axles...
Yes.
You're not changing steering geometry at all, right? You're not impacting necessarily the way the vehicle steers because that you've got one fixed plane with that solid axle that doesn't move, right? So it's really easy to lift Wranglers and still get them to drive pretty close to how they drive originally, which is the problem with Wranglers is that they don't drive very well out of the box on the road, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, earlier I said if I were going to Moab, the vehicle I'd want to take to go off to go on road is a 4Runner, and the one off road is a Bronco. Mm-hmm. The one I would leave at home, especially on the highway, is the Wrangler.
And it's not
horrible.
Toyota people will make it sound like they drive like wheelbarrows.
They don't.
It's not that bad.
The Grenadier was much worse.
No, it wasn't worse. It was just the steering was bad.
It wandered down the
but
road
that's also
like a lost puppy.
That's also solid front axle, right? The Grenadier.
Yeah.
And also
incredibly off road.
Recirculating ball is purposefully very vague for off-road use, right? The nice thing about recirculating ball is you're not going to get any whip back in the steering wheel. It's going to be nice and progressive at all times, and the Wrangler steering is the best steering off-road, at least for rock crawling. So
it also feels like the most well-built off-road. It feels like it's
the least fragile.
It feels the least fragile.
Yeah.
It's very much like it's the one you're going to want to bash the most.
Right.
Maybe you can fast forward this video call and go to actually where we're doing a little bit of off-roading so we can actually see it as it's doing its thing. But yeah, this is the one where I feel like it definitely has all the skid plate. It definitely has all of the off-road goodies where if you slam it into a rock, you're not going to damage it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think that part of that is just the perception, because we've done more hard off-roading in a Wrangler than in another vehicle.
Mm.
You know, we've been down the Rubicon twice in Wranglers. We haven't in Broncos. And I know Broncos have and can. So it'd be really cool if Ford put that trip together. I'd love to talk to some engineers and do the Rubicon
trail with
them.
By the way, this 41, mm-hmm. That's my favorite Wrangler right now. Look at that. It looks so military.
The problem with the Wrangler is the powertrains are aging. And it's
also the only one with the V8.
Was.
Yeah.
Well, that was the only one with the V8.
I got to tell you, Ford wants to like sell a lot more Broncos, slap a Coyote in that.
Oh,
thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're smart enough. Ford, I'm sure you're smart enough. You know that. But my God, you put a V8 in the Bronco, and all those people with the 6 and the 4 cylinder are going to go at the dealership and line up out the door.
But
I'll be there.
I've never really loved the 4-cylinder.
Yeah. Okay.
Turbo.
Yeah.
And
I don't like this. Is it a 2.5?
It's a 2-liter.
2-liter, yeah.
And that's largely down to that refinement that we were talking about with the 4Runner is even worse in the Wrangler because the power delivery is jerky, in my opinion. It's not typical. I think most people will find it fine, but I just don't like the way that turbo interacts with the transmission and the engine. And it also sounds like a sewing machine. It has this kind of high-pitched whine that just drives me up the wall. So V6 is fine, but
Pentastar
it's
is
very dated.
Very dated,
at this point.
But proved.
Still the best engine in the Wrangler, in my opinion.
Yeah, proved. And this is the 4xe.
Which is cool, but it's kind of feels like they had some more tuning to do with it.
So here we're watching it go up the wall. This is the one that the Land Rover struggled with. Let's see how this one does.
Yeah, so you can see there's no limiting of power. There's no nannies trying to save the transmission or protect the torque converter. It just lets you do whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Wranglers have always been really good at, is you are in control, for better or for worse. It's all down to your foot to make it happen.
The other thing about the Wranglers, of course, it's the only one that's available in a plug-in hybrid. So you can get the Toyota, of course, in a hybrid. Which we did not get because I don't see the value of it.
Yep.
It only gives you like 2 mpg more.
It gives you a lot more horsepower, but it doesn't feel that different.
But you don't need horsepower off-road.
Yeah.
Whereas this one has the plug-in hybrid, and you can go up to, I think it's like 25 miles of all-electric, mm-hmm. something like that. And we were wheeling here all-electric, which is actually
cool.
Very nice. Yeah, because you have tons of torque.
But the reason I wheel it all-electric is because I absolutely hate the sound that the 2-liter makes. So I would rather... wheel and all electric, so you don't have to listen to that Dyson, then have that thing kick on. But
and let's face it, Tommy, we were around. This is now what, 5 years into it, 6 years into it, when they introduced the JL. That's the current model,
mm-hmm.
And it's a huge improvement over the JK.
Sure.
So the JK was around for 10 years, and then the JL came along, and we were like, "Wow, you fixed a lot of the things that were wrong with the JK, and yet you still kept that traditional 7-sided grille and everything that this old World War II Jeep was, which is really cool."
Uh-huh.
And then the Bronco came along and like benchmarked the Wrangler in every way.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see that somewhere in Ford, right, there was like, okay, it's got front rear lock, or we're going to have a front and a rear lock, or it's got a disc coupled sway bar, we're going to have a disc coupled sway bar, right?
Yeah.
And then Ford took it like 20% better in a lot of ways,
yeah,
especially in on-road comfort and in passenger comfort. The problem with the Wrangler is, yes, you can fold down that front windshield, but it's straight up and down. So it's not great on the highway. Interior space is compromised in a lot of ways. And a lot of the little kind of things that make a Wrangler very difficult to live with, which a lot of people do, by the way. It's amazing that people use Wranglers, which are these purpose-built off-road machines for, like, kid runs, but they do. But I think Jeep is now kind of behind the ball when it comes to just livability compared to certainly the 4Runner and to the Bronco.
Well, I mean, and the problem is that would be fine if they kept their prices at 2017 levels. But this 4xe we're driving in this video, this 41 Willys, was $68,000, right?
And this didn't even have all the lockers.
No, it only had the rear locker, had cloth interior, right? Didn't have ventilated seats, and that's $68,000. It really needs these things to compete with what Ford's doing. So the pricing is the biggest problem with the current Wrangler. And I do agree with you. Like, I think that a lot of people appreciate the size and just the comfort that comes with the Ford that the Jeep doesn't have.
Yeah, it just feels like it's more refined while still keeping much of the off-road goodness that the Jeep offers. I also feel like Jeep in some ways has lost their mojo. In terms of like creativity and coming up with innovation. And I say that because I was there 2 years ago when they facelifted the Wrangler.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was gave it a bigger screen.
Power seats.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Power seats and a different grill, which I can't tell the difference.
Sure.
And I was expecting a lot more. I was expecting something like maybe an onboard compressor, right? Which would be great. Which
you can get.
You can get an outboard compressor.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of creativity when they did the, of course, the 392, and then they did the Extreme package. But I think the reason they did that was because Bronco came out and forced them to do it.
Right.
I'm not sure Jeep would have done like the Extreme Recon,
mm-hmm.
right, with the 35s if Bronco hadn't done the Sasquatch.
For sure. Yeah. No, I mean, look, I think Jeep is playing the model that they've played now for 30 years, where they launch a vehicle, it's got a 10-year production span, right? And then they launch their core products, and then after those first 3 years, they start trickling in special editions like this 41 that we're driving here, and then they keep milking that for 10 years, and then they come out with a new Wrangler. The problem is that in this era, when Ford and Toyota are launching seemingly new products and new versions all of the time, like Ford just launched the Strope Bronco, right? Jeep cannot use that model from 2007. They have to either come out with a new product or come out with a new pricing strategy, because what they're doing is not working against what Ford offers, which is realistically, across most trims, more towing capacity, more power, right? V6 twin turbo power optional, more gears in the transmission, for both the manual and the automatic. Just more options, more variety, and just kind of more interesting things, to be honest, right now. So off-road, the Wrangler is still amazing.
I think it's the best off-road.
But
if I were going off-road, I would take a Wrangler.
Yeah, if all you do is rock crawling, the Wrangler is going to be better than the Bronco.
Yeah.
At least at the top end.
But not mudding.
But not mudding.
As we know now.
Yes. So much as we got the Everglades Bronco with no mud at all in Colorado.
Except at the ranch where we have copious amounts of mud for some reason.
But yeah, Jeep needs to do something and fast, because I think that Ford's going to start eating their lunch.
And it's actually more critical than that, because unlike the 4Runner and unlike the Bronco, I think if you were to ask somebody what vehicle has the DNA of the brand, in other words, what if somebody says, I own a Jeep, right?
Right.
Chances are you're going to think it's a Wrangler.
Sure.
It just is. Mm-hmm. But if somebody says, I own a Ford, you're not going to go to Bronco. You're probably going to go to F-150.
Yeah, or right? Mustang.
Yeah, exactly. And if somebody says, I own a Toyota, you're not going to go to 4Runner. You might.
You might.
You might. But I think the DNA is Land Cruiser.
A Land Cruiser, yeah.
The
DNA.
So for the vehicle that is the DNA of the brand, the one that, you know, represents the brand, you got to be on top of your game. And right now, I think Jeep has slipped behind a little bit. I love Jeeps. And by no means did we get rid of our Jeep because we wanted to get a better vehicle. It was just time to share the love, right? We want to be fair to all the brands, so we don't want to be like known as just Ford guys or Jeep guys or Toyota guys, so we kind of mix it up, and it was time to go back to Ford for an off-roader. I think that Jeep is probably, and I hope that they're, you know, in their headquarters cooking up something unique and different. Now, in the time that we have left, which isn't a lot, let's talk about the Land Cruiser. I'm sorry, let's talk about the Land Rover Defender, because we also owned a Defender.
Yeah, and the Defender, I think...
We own the 90, which is a two-door.
Yeah, the 90 is a very niche vehicle. I think it's one of the only vehicles in the U.S. that pays the chicken tax, which is a 25% tariff on all imported vehicles.
Except, you know what else pays the chicken tax?
The Grenadier Quartermaster.
Exactly, the truck.
Yes, the truck and two-door SUVs. I love the Defender. Part of that might be because I just have a little bit of Land Rover inherent bias, I think.
Yep.
Which is not good, but I want to just put that out there. But what I like about the Defender is it has a tremendous amount of character and charm, and is by far the best performing on-road of all of the ones we've talked about.
Yeah, it's definitely better than the 4Runner.
Yes. But feels like a more premium product, which it is, from a interior quality standpoint.
And from a design standpoint. I mean, it's really well designed, right? It looks... They managed to take the old Defender and modernize it, which is not easy, which was much beloved too.
Right.
And then the interior, they managed to make it very rugged looking and practical and... not like stuffy.
And I think if you're doing the kind of trails I'm doing in this video,
yep,
which is like a 4 out of 10, we're talking kind of aggressive service roads, maybe a few obstacles, the Defender is perfect, right? It's going to be very comfortable. It's with that optional 4-corner air suspension.
Well, we didn't have it. We had the
coil springs, yeah, which was definitely a mistake on ours. And it's got a very impressive...
Somebody 10 years from now will appreciate us.
Yeah, someone down the road will appreciate not having the air struts.
And everybody's taking off the air struts.
So I think that, and it has the most character, I'd have to say, of all of them. It just has a really big personality.
I think the Jeep's got more, but that's all right.
If you do want to talk about straight up capability on the trail, it's not going to be anywhere near what any of the other three are going to do. Right. It just doesn't, at least with the coil suspension that can't elevate, it was severely lacking in ground clearance out of the box. Aftermarket support is much more minimal and quite expensive.
Lucky eight,
kind of one of your only options. Yeah. There's a few others, but that's the biggest. And then just like what you can do with tire and wheel options is much more limited. So it's a very cool vehicle, and I like that it feels like you're on safari when you take it out, even going to the grocery store. But it's not going to have that same impressive level of capability.
Now we have the 4-cylinder. I think it was a 2.5, right? Turbo.
No, it was a 2-liter.
It was a 2-liter?
That was the best 2-liter, by the way.
It was the best 2-liter. I drove that.
By far the most refined out of all the 4-cylinder turbos.
I drove that from here to Arizona, which is 1,000 miles through kind of the back country. And I was driving it quickly, Tommy, and never felt like I needed more power.
And surprisingly, even though people are going to say it's faked, the reliability on new Defender has been very good. people have been, I know
we're going to get comments.
Yeah, because we had to go through three of them when it first came out. But really, only one of those was Land Rover's fault. The other one was the dealer's fault. But generally, it seems like people have had very good luck with new Defender in terms of long-term reliability.
Well, this is definitely a car that if you're going to do most of your living on road, you're going to want.
Yeah,
Because sure. it's got that great combination of on-road presence mm-hmm. with great styling, with comfortable ride, with a practical yet stylish interior, and horrible resale. So if you buy a used one, you can get it at a bargain.
Yeah, no, the resale's awful on these, which is great for buying them used, 100%. So yeah, I really like that Defender quite a lot, and I do miss it occasionally. But
Pangea green,
yeah. And the 90s are super rare. Everyone gets the 110.
And those Steelies, well, they weren't Steelies, they're fake Steelies, but they look so badass. I think we had KO3s on ours, but this is, you'll see right here, this is where you run out of ability, right? You were going up this hill, and I think you ran out of...
Well, ground clearance, it just bottomed out.
Yeah, well, that's ability.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if this had the air suspension, you could jack it up and get some more clearance out of it, but... As it sat, yeah, it kind of bellied out on this steep incline. I mean, I think the other one we need to talk about just briefly, because it's much more expensive, but it's also kind of in the same world.
We got 6 minutes.
Is the Grenadier.
Yeah, the Grenadier was incredible off-road. We and you took that into Hell's Revenge, Tommy. I have never been impressed more with a vehicle than the Grenadier, especially since it looks so undertired. And what I mean by that is it's got like
32s, like that, yeah.
It just looks like it needs, and it, when people actually lift it and put bigger wheels and tires on it, it is so good looking. It is so focused on off-roading. I mean... Wow, what a great off-roader. I could not think of a better combination between the BMW straight six, mm-hmm. 300 horsepower-ish, and of course, kind of that overlandy old Defender styling. So you've got the best of new and old in one vehicle. And I mean, the customization is incredible. You know, we had this incredible blue color. I was able to spec out a snorkel. You could get a winch from the factory.
Yep.
You could just, get anything you want. Love the vehicle. Hated the on-road.
Well, you just hated the chime.
I hated the on-road. I hated the seats. Those Recaro seats are freaking miserable. I just didn't think I think that they put all the cred into their off-road ability and didn't give a lot of design or attention to the on-road version.
I think you're right, but that's what was cool about this vehicle is it was essentially the brainchild of one man,
yeah.
Right? Oh gosh.
Sir Jim Ratcliffe. That's right.
And he didn't care about fuel economy. He didn't care about on-road driving dynamics. He just wanted to build a modern interpretation of a new Defender. And that is what happens when one man has a dream and there's not a committee.
Solid axle.
To say him no. Yeah. So, yeah, it was pretty bad on road, and the steering is...
You loved it, though. This was your dream truck.
Yeah, because this has even more personality than the Defender, right? It was
I love those, 747 controls.
Yeah, and when it was such
until you have to use them.
The screen was kind of a mess, and it had a bunch of glitches, and then the dealer network is not nearly big enough. But as just a straightforward, no-nonsense, go-hit-the-trail machine, that thing was freaking awesome. I absolutely loved it. So the Grenadier... They're not depreciating as fast as I'd want them to depreciate.
Is it going
to
buy one?
I'd like to. If they can get to $25,000, I would pick one up. But they're still $65,000, $70,000 even on the used market.
Yeah.
But yeah, God, they're so cool. Same thing with the G-Wagons, right? Also a car with a ton of capability that nobody uses. Yeah. So
there you go. There you can see all those cool little buttons.
God, that thing was awesome. Yeah. So I love that. And it was kind of like the Wrangler. It's like a big... It's like a really big, boxy Wrangler.
You know,
it feels incredibly overbuilt.
I was listening to a conversation, one of the podcasts, with the CEO of the company, mm-hmm. And she was great. This woman is incredible. She's well spoken. She knows the vehicle inside a lot. By the way, my favorite feature was that. Is it the honk button? Is it
the toot?
The toot. Yeah, the little horn.
Yep.
But I kind of felt like they just didn't do their homework when it came to what is now their biggest market, America.
They don't understand marketing.
Yeah. They don't understand the American market. I don't think they understand how Americans buy and use cars.
Yes, but I think a lot of that's marketing. Like I was talking to them and they're marketing it toward golf and leisure, right? When they're marketing it as they would to fox hunts in the UK. this kind of like upper crust nobility, and they assume that American fox hunters are going to buy this. And that's not a thing that exists in America, right? They need to be appealing.
Sir, you haven't gone hunting foxes recently?
Exactly. They have to be appealing to the Utah crowd, not the
I think they have to go after the G-Wagon crowd.
Yeah, they could do that too.
You know what I mean?
Popular. What's going on over there?
Oh, so Andre's texting me. We're going to do a Denver 100 today to find out how well the Maverick tows when you put a trailer behind it and see what kind of fuel economy we get, because we got 41 mpg on the Denver 100 without towing. So I was curious to see what it does towing. So he wanted to know if I wanted to go do that video. But unfortunately, I got to go to the dentist. Oh, there goes up the wall, right?
Yep, there it goes.
Didn't struggle whatsoever.
Well, it's struggling now.
Well, I don't think you were locked.
The lockers are unlocked, yeah.
You wanted to try it unlocked because you wanted to show off.
Yeah, but I love the Grenadier. I'd love to own one day if they can get cheap enough. So that's where I'm at with that thing. But dealer network is too small. Tech sucks. Interior, like you said, is not very good. But yeah, very cool car.
Well, I'll tell you why I was listening to the interview, why I thought that they didn't do their research on America. And I think this is also kind of the same problem in some ways that Rivian has experienced, and specifically with the truck, right? In America, we have 4 sizes of trucks. Mm-hmm. And this is something that if you're from Europe, you may not understand. Like a truck is a truck, right?
Right.
But we have compact trucks, Maverick, mid-size trucks, Tacoma, full-size trucks, F-150, heavy-duty trucks, Super Duty.
Sure.
And those are very specific, and they have very specific jobs. And anytime you ever come up with a truck that's a tweener, it goes kind of in between. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Fieldmaster, right? It's somewhere between a full size
and mid-size.
I think it's much harder to sell.
Quartermaster is not a good vehicle because it's $112,000. They basically
That gets hit by the chicken tax.
They pass the chicken tax, or at least some of it, off to the consumer.
And now the tariffs as well.
Yeah, and it's just not it. But the standard Grenadier is a very cool vehicle.
Right, but I think Rivian would have done much better.
Ineos.
No, Rivian.
The EV company?
Yeah, Rivian would have done much better with the R1T if it had made it actually a mid-size truck and not a tweener. And I think same thing with the Fieldmaster. If you wanted to go after the American market, you would have gone full-size.
Quartermaster,
full-size or mid-size. But when you go in that in-between, it's just the salespeople don't know how to sell it. The capability is kind of weird because you can't cross-shop them because it's this weird thing where it doesn't fit into any category. And I think that's where at least the truck. But I loved the car. And you want to talk about why? What I hate it? Okay, I'm going to be really cruel here, but might as well be honest. And that is one of the reasons we sold it was because in Europe, there's legislation that if you exceed the speed limit, even by 1 mile an hour, the car has to beep at you.
Yep.
Like beep. And the Grenadier beeped at you 4 times.
Yep.
And then when you slow down or stop at a stoplight and then you exceed it again by 1 mile an hour, it beeps at you again.
Yep.
And in order to turn that off, there was a way you'd have to go in and you'd have to kind of go 4 menus deep and then turn it off. Or you could set one of those quick functions. Mm-hmm. But the problem with the quick functions is if you had CarPlay running, it would take over and then the quick functions wouldn't work. And then every time we had to get in the car, I struggled to turn it off. And I just felt that a company that can't kill one line of code when they're bringing this vehicle into America, probably doesn't deserve the money that I'm going to spend on this thing because it is such an easy fix.
It's fixed though now.
Yeah, but it took them forever. Same thing with towing. They also had a towing issue.
But it's fixed.
Yes,
it's
it is
good
fixed
to go.
Now. I know, but it took them a year.
What towing issue?
The software wasn't available, so initially when the vehicles came out, you couldn't get it with the tow package because software wouldn't support it.
But that's fixed.
Yes, but it wasn't when we bought it. So maybe we bought it too early. I don't know.
All right, folks. Well, I think you got some stuff going on there, so I'll let you.
No. I'm good.
Get back to work there.
No. This is work. Andre's just texting me crazy, so I just wanted to get back to him. All right. Before we wrap this up, and I think we got to wrap it up. Let's just wrap it up.
Yeah, for sure. And folks, if you want to see more about our Bronco, head over to TFL Off-Roader. We'll have a bunch of videos coming soon. I want to do kind of like a trail series this summer where we push it off-road and check out some of the amazing trails here in Colorado. So stay tuned for those.
Yeah, and check out Carish, the podcast of Tommy and Case and Jen and Mary do. It's my favorite podcast of all, Tommy, so I really enjoy it. I listen. I don't usually watch our videos if I don't have to because we do so many videos that I just kind of scan them, make sure they're good. But I've been really enjoying listening to your hour and a half podcast because you guys are super entertaining. So check out Carish.
Yep, for sure. And head over to altfl.com for more videos.
Yep, we'll see you next time. Ciao.